So I typed a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I wanna be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And hate to see y'all frown, but I'd rather see her smiling. Wetness all around me, true, but I'm no island. Peninsula, maybe. Makes no sense. I know crazy.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, April 25th, 2018, and you're listening to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here with fellow beat reporter Tom Silverstein for a pre-draft edition of the podcast. Of course, the NFL draft kicks off later this week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, so be sure to check PackersNews.com and JSOnline.com for all kinds of coverage. And Tom, it's another year, and you're still here doing this again. Don't you just love the draft, Tom?
It's, you know, I used to let Bob handle all of it, and I could just do all the kind of peripheral things and do my draft visit story and a few features and things like that. But it was a little more intense this year, and I had to learn a little bit more about players. And it's actually been kind of nice to get to know more players than I would normally going into the draft. I hadn't done that for a long time, and it was kind of interesting.
I think for me, when I first started to really pay attention to this in 2015, which was my first year on the beat, it's like you always know that there's a lot of mock drafts and stuff out there, but boy, when you start Googling, I feel like there is so much more information about the NFL draft than there is any other draft in any sport I can think of.
Yeah, and you know what? So much of it is wrong. It's just totally guessing. Because, you know, you go back and you'll see team, you can make obvious connections between teams, what their needs are and what the players are available, but you can't exactly tell what appeals to every single general manager who's making those picks. And you can't, of course, can't judge what trades are going to happen. But I think there's always a couple things that go not the way the so-called experts thought, and it can really make the round. It could screw up a lot of people's mock draft, let's just say that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll talk about one of those scenarios in a minute here as we get into some of the things that Brian Gutekunst had to say in his first pre-draft press conference on Monday. But let's start a little bit bigger picture, as you mentioned, with your visit story in terms of the guys that the Packers decide to bring in for the 30 allotted visits that they have prior to the draft. And obviously, you saw Ted Thompson's approach for the entirety of his career as general manager, and I saw it at the tail end, but it was a pretty big difference this year. And so for people that may not follow it as closely, what was the big change or the changes that Brian Gutekunst tried to make this year?
Well, essentially the group that he brought in, there are a number of guys who are going to go in the first round, and probably a lot of guys that'll go in the second date as well. That was not what Ted Thompson did. Unless it was an obvious medical check, they just didn't bring in, highly rated guys because Thompson just wanted nobody to know anything about what he was considering. And so all he would bring in were guys who would be late round picks or undrafted guys who he would try to sign as free agents. And it was fascinating, and I really enjoyed it because I was able to unearth a lot of names that I'd never heard of before, and most people hadn't heard of. A lot of small school guys, the Lindsey Pipkins of the world, and Donatello Browns, and guys like that. And this year, I would say there were only a handful of those type of guys. There were mostly draftable guys that they brought in.
Yeah, and in particular, you know, some of the guys that they brought in could go a few picks higher than 14. It's not as if they just looked at guys in the back half of the first round either. Now, I don't really know if I have an opinion one way or the other, and maybe you don't either, but what do you sort of think about the more secretive approach that Thompson had versus the let's find out more information about the guys that we don't want to mess up with our first overall pick? Do you feel strongly one way or the other?
Well, here's the thing. So I was going through, you know, looking at Gutekunst's slice of guys. You know, one person said to me, one agent said to me, boy, that's a pretty diverse group of guys that he brought in. But I started looking at it and I'm sort of like, okay, so he brought in Derwin James, but he also brought in Mike Hughes, who are two guys that possibly, you know, maybe one he could trade up for, one who could possibly be there. Dante Jackson, another corner he brought in. So, like, who's the smokescreen there? Then, you know, he brings in Colton Miller and Connor Williams, two pretty highly rated tackles. Who's the smokescreen there? You know, is one, are they really interested in one and not the other? And he's trying to just make people guess, or are they just trying to make people think they'll take a tackle? You know, you can kind of go through it that way quite a bit. But there's also some guys, some really interesting guys that you could tell they just, these are guys they're interested in and they wanted to know more about. And if the draft, you know, goes a certain way, I think they'll try to get them. So a lot of things going on.
Yeah, and one of the things that I noticed just across the guys, whether it was players that, you know, are likely to go early or maybe even guys that don't get drafted, is I generally was looking at some of the 40 times that you had, and there were some pretty impressive times there, even for guys that are projected to be undrafted. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily something that is you know, totally new and innovative. Obviously, every team wants speed, but it seems to me that, you know, for a team that has drafted, you know, a Quentin Rollins in recent years or a Vince Beagle, you know, that didn't necessarily blow guys off the line of scrimmage. You know, you're looking at an edge rusher that they have that you projected as an undrafted guy from Southeast Missouri State. Again, a guy that's probably going to be a free agent, but he's 4.44 off the edge. And something like that just sort of catches my eye. Exactly. Yeah. And so I don't know if you noticed that as well, but to me it looked like across the board, I didn't see many 40 times above 4.59 for the positions that need to be able to run.
Yeah, and once again, I think this started last year, especially last year. They're going for length. A lot of guys with long arms and speed, and you know, kind of explosiveness. I think they're willing to give up on some bulk just to get some really long-armed guys, long-levered, as McCarthy likes to say. And some really, really good athletes on this list. I mean, even the big guys that they brought in could run, you know? I mean, it's obvious that speed is something they really covet now, more so than they did in the past. I think, you know, in the past, they felt like playing in the playing at Lambeau Field, they didn't need speed as much because it was a slow surface and, you know, everybody would get slowed down to their level and they wanted to be good on grass. And I think that that's changed a little bit. I think they're much more cognizant of getting 4.4 guys.
The other thing that jumped out to me, and I can't necessarily say that I looked as closely this year as I did the past 2 years in terms of counting these players, but four guys from Wisconsin on the top 30 list. Is that a number? That seemed a little bit high to me because I feel like if they're going to know anything about guys, it's guys that are close to them geographically. Is that unusual to bring in four out of 30 from Wisconsin?
Well, actually, two of the four were local visits, which means the guys pay their way to come up to Green Bay. They're not part of the top 30. And an interesting thing that I heard was that they tried to get like a caravan or send a, I don't know if it's a van or a town car or something, and get like six Badgers to come up on their own. just meet with them. They wanted to meet with a lot of Badger guys. And I think that's probably just, you know, I think Gutekunst wants to have a good relationship in state. But, you know, there are also some prospects and to let them get to know Green Bay a little bit. And What happened was the NFL rejected it and said, no, you know, Packers can't pay for this to go up. They've got to go on their own. So they brought up Jack Ceci, I believe, was a 30 visit. And Ramesh and Connor Sheehy were not. They paid their own way. I'm trying to think who else was. Jamerson, I believe, was top 30, but I'm not positive about that. So anyway, yeah, they tried to bring, they invited a lot of Wisconsin guys to come up on their own.
That's really interesting. And, you know, kind of, again, you know, we see these little things here and there, the attempt to go after Kyle Fuller, the changes here in terms of bringing in more first round guys, the idea of sending a caravan to bring in Wisconsin guys. Now, obviously not all of those ideas have worked out, especially the Kyle Fuller thing, but it just shows you that there is at least a, I don't know if I want to say more creativity, but just like, you know, thinking outside the box and saying, okay, let's try this and see what happens. And if it's not something that's going to hurt the Packers, it seems like they're at least open to, you know, pushing the edges of the box a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, this is, Gutekunst is trying to put his own stamp on this operation. And there's things that I'm sure he's seen over the years that he said to himself, if I ever get in this position, I'm going to do it this way. And, you know, there's also things where a guy like Ted Thompson has been in the business so long, he gets set in his ways and he does it the same every year. And I think Gutekunst probably wanted to explore some other ways of doing things. And it appears like he is. Now we'll find out whether he, of course, the big thing is whether he can set a board and stick to it the way Ted Thompson did. If there's anything that Ted Thompson, that we know about Ted Thompson, is that he set a board and he stuck to it. And that'll be a big key for Gutekunst.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish I could be a fly on the wall every year in the draft room. But this year in particular, I would be interested to see what kind of approach Ted takes in terms of, you know, does he only make a comment when somebody asks him? Does he try and help as the process goes along? I think that is just a fascinating dynamic, as clearly Gutekunst, as you mentioned, wants to put his own stamp on things, but he also doesn't necessarily want to, I don't think he wants to belittle Ted in any way or try and downplay the role that he has, but I kind of get the sense that over the last couple of months, the level of involvement that Gutekunst has said Ted would have, perhaps versus what he's actually been having, might be a little bit different. Just sort of a hunch that I have based on some of the things that he said and some of the things that I've heard. But I don't know. Do you have any idea of what his role specifically might be this week?
I think he was there. I think Gutekunst said he was there when they were setting their board and going through the draft meetings. And it sounded like Ted's mostly just been watching tape. And I think he lets the scouts... my guess is he lets the scouts do their thing. And, I mean, that's what he did as a general manager, too. He gave them the floor to explain how they viewed and make arguments. That was sort of the Ron Wolf way. He demanded that you come to the table with an opinion on a guy. He didn't always agree with it, and he would make the final decision. But he wanted to hear all the arguments. And I would guess that Thompson just threw in stuff where he noticed it.
Yeah.
And I think he will be there as a resource for Gutekunst. I think people sometimes overplay what goes on in the draft room. A lot of that stuff is so gone over. I mean, everything is plotted and planned, and scenarios are looked at. The only thing that it's likely that in talking to our GM, it was actually today, said something will come up that will screw you up. You know, one scenario that'll pop up that you weren't expecting and you have to make a decision right on the spot and you better be ready to do it and don't hesitate and know your stuff. And that might be where Gutekunst leans on Ted a little bit if something unexpected comes up, or Ted sees something unexpected coming up.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And another thing that sort of would interest me too is whether or not Ted could play a small role in any trades that pop up, because obviously Gutekunst has been in that room over and over and over again for the time he's been with the Packers. But I feel like just for any person, whether it's you or me or somebody that's in that business, it would be a little bit different when all the trade offers are being thrown at you and you're the one that has to make the call. And so I don't know if that's an area where he might ask and say, Ted, well, you've made a bunch of trades over your time during the draft. What do you think of this scenario? And it's funny, it's interesting too that you mentioned, that everything is so mapped out, because that was another point that I thought Gutekunst made that caught my attention in his press conference, which was that because they're picking 14, which is significantly higher than where they've picked a lot of the time with Aaron Rodgers, that quarterback. They've been able to sort of mock draft, I guess, would be the best way to explain it, but to go over the first 13 picks and try and plan it out a little bit more because there's less margin for error with fewer picks ahead of them. Is that something that you think can actually be beneficial? Are these guys so good at their job that they can probably get close to the first 13 correct?
Well, I think they can judge. I don't know if they'll judge who exactly what order they go in, but I think they'll look at their board and be fairly confident that the guys who they see will be gone. They're top 13, but what they're looking for is one to slip through the cracks and see if someone on their top 14 or 13 slips through that through to the 14th pick. And I think that there will probably be someone like that, because every team believes its draft board is correct. I think for the most part, they'll be able to see things starting to fall into place after six, seven, eight picks, and be able to predict whether they maybe want to trade out of there or maybe they want to chase a guy. So it is a little bit easier doing it when you're picking at 14. It's just the price of moving up and down is pretty expensive.
So let's talk about the 14th pick a little bit. I think when you look at the defensive side of the ball, everyone looks at cornerback and edge rusher as two spots that they either haven't addressed or have addressed in ways that are not long-term solutions, i.e. bringing back Devon House and Tremont Williams. When you look at that side of the ball, I think those are the areas that jump out. When you look on the other side of the ball, I think they could use a right tackle, a guard, or a wide receiver. But do you think that given the way the seasons have ended for the Packers in recent years, especially with a lot of the unsightly defensive performances, whether it's toward the end of the regular season or in the playoffs, do you think that, or would you be surprised, I should say, if they did not take a defensive player in the first round?
I would not be surprised at all. I think the biggest obstacle they face is overdrafting a defensive player. So when they get to 14, I think the right player has to be there. I think it would be hard and would be a stretch for them to go after certain guys on that board that I keep seeing people give them, that it would be a little bit of a stretch. And I don't know if, I hear from what you're talking to people, Gutekunst probably is leans a little more conservative than Elliot Wolf would have, or John Dorsey might, or John Schneider. I think he's probably a little more like Ted Thompson. So I don't think he would take a flyer on a boom or bust guy. And there's a number of those guys right there at that number at 14. And it'll be real interesting to see what happens if that's what's left for him. And what does he have? Because I going through it over and over again, I keep seeing like 13 guys that are really good, that are no-brainers. And then you get to 14, and it's like, unless something happens that bumps one of those guys down, I'm like, I don't know what you do with four at 14.
Yeah, you know, I asked. It was actually a question that you recommended that I ask Gutekunst when I was at the owners' meetings. I think the way you phrased it to me and the way I phrased it to him was, does he see a big difference between picking 0 to 10 and 10 to 14 in this particular draft? Because there's some drafts where, you know, the really good players that you just mentioned would extend to 16, 17, 18, maybe even 20, and other drafts where it might not get outside the top 10. And he, you know, again, you can't necessarily make a lot out of this answer because he doesn't want to downplay the talent of the draft in case he wants to try and make a trade. But his answer was that he doesn't see a big difference between 0 to 10 and 10 to 14 because he thinks there can still be really good players at 14. Now, of course, that's what he's going to want to say if he's trying to move up and sell it to a team that would potentially move back to 14. But I just sort of thought that your question was really an interesting one, because I kind of agree with you. I think that if I was picking anywhere between 9 and 11, I'd feel pretty good. And then after that, it gets a little bit dicey. Is there anybody in particular that, you know, you look at names that have been thrown out there to the Packers that kind of make you scratch your head a little bit, just in terms of the flyer potential that you noted?
Yeah, Harold Landry see that one quite a bit. To me, that would be just the wrong foot to get off on for Gutekunst. It's got all kinds of boom or bust potential, and he can't afford to have a bust in this draft. This draft is really important for him. And I think the same is true of Marcus Davenport. I think he has to have a ton of guts to make that selection because it's not going to help him in the early going to have Marcus Davenport. He's going to take some time. He might wind up being a really good player, but he's probably not going to give you much for a couple of years. So I kind of see him shying away from picks like that. Mike Hughes, cornerback, I think he would take him in most scenarios, except, he's got an off the field issue and, there's some height things there. I don't know. That's one that you would have to be real careful with too. So, I don't know. I think it's really questionable. Calvin Ridley, I think, is a really good player, but at 14, he's probably not going to be a dominant Pro Bowl type player. He kind of reminds me of Greg Jennings, which I'm sure they'd love to have Greg Jennings, but they got Greg Jennings in the second round. So why, I just think there's a lot of guys there who have people who have given really high grades to, and Gutekunst might or should pass up.
No, I tend to agree with you. And again, perhaps it's simplistic of me to suggest this, but given the fact that you and I sort of seem to agree that the top end players kind of cap out around the first dozen, and given the fact that the Packers have the most draft picks of anybody in the league, I wonder if this is a year where it's more likely that he trades up than trades back. Because if the quarterbacks do all go early, the way that people think they might, then, you know, it could really benefit him to get up to 10, or even 11, if he could do so. And, you know, there's a couple players that I think, will probably be gone by the time the Packers pick, but, you know, I really like the kid from Virginia Tech, Tremaine Edmonds. He is a fascinating guy to me for a lot of different reasons. And I know you don't draft one player for another player because that doesn't really make sense philosophically, but if he were to be on the field at the same time as Clay Matthews, that to me could be incredibly interesting because Edmonds is an inside linebacker that you can also rush from the edge, and obviously Clay Matthews has done both, and I just think that would provide remarkable interchangeability for Mike Pettine. But again, that's a guy that I don't think will be there, and I totally
Right,
agree
and
with you.
nobody's going to give up their pick for him, I don't think. To allow someone else to come in and
Right.
select him. I'd be shocked. I think what you'll see are the quarterbacks and Quentin Nelson and Barkley and Chubb come off the board, and then Edmonds has to come right after that.
I agree.
he is a special kind of guy. I mean, 19 years old and hasn't even scratched the surface. He's got no marks against him personally. Tremendous workout guy. Might be a little bit before you get as much as you want out of him, but boy, that's a good pick if you can get him.
So I started looking last night at a bunch of mock drafts after not really looking at him for a couple of weeks, and I just kind of wanted to see what would change or what I noticed to have changed. And the two guys that I saw falling most frequently, and again, put as much stock into mock drafts as you want, but the two guys that I saw falling most frequently to around the Packers or at least close enough where if they wanted to move up, it wouldn't be, moving from like 14 to 6, were Denzel Ward I saw falling a number of times to about 11 or 12. And then I saw Derwin James falling anywhere from 13 to 20 in certain drafts. And that was more than one draft that had him falling. What do you think about those two guys? Because that's obviously an area of need in terms of the corner position and the slot corner position.
I think it's be a absolute miracle if either of those two guys or Minkah Fitzpatrick were available. I just think those guys are gone. I would be really shocked. The only way one of them might is if there's this, if Lamar Jackson sneaks into the top 13,
yep,
maybe at 12, Buffalo takes him. If someone reaches and goes for like Harold Landry earlier than some would, or Marcus Davenport, then maybe it pushes someone. But Ward is the best corner in the draft, and there's too many teams that need corners. It's just you got to have corners, and I can't see him making it that far. Derwin James is a phenomenal athlete. Maybe he drops somehow based on I don't know what, that he's a safety maybe and people don't view safeties as that valuable, but I'm really kind of just blowing smoke here because I don't know how you could pass him up. And then Fitzpatrick, some people said to me that he's really, really good and could be the best of those three, so I don't know. And would be really surprised if either of them or any of those three are available.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And then again, you mentioned the fact that if Landry or Davenport go higher than expected, then that pushes somebody down. Another scenario to throw out could be is if somebody reaches for Calvin Ridley and then somebody else who desperately needs a receiver reaches for DJ Moore because Ridley is gone or something like that,
Right,
But
kind of chain reaction.
Exactly. But other than that, I think it's a tricky spot for the Packers to be in. One name that we sort of missed that I know you and I both like, ever since we got a chance to see him in person, Roquan Smith. I don't think he's going to be there either, but another guy that I think the Packers would kill for if he somehow fell.
Oh God. Yeah. I like all those Georgia guys. I don't know that there's a Georgia guy that I don't like out of that whole group. I mean, really, how did they not win the national championship?
I don't know. And they've got the number one recruiting class coming in next year, I think I saw, or in the top two or three. So it looks like they're going to be pretty good. But yeah, I mean, that offensive lineman, Isaiah Wynn, I think is going to be a heck of a player. And even, the two running backs, they had, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. They're not going to be early picks, maybe second or third rounders. But I think both those guys can play.
Yeah, yeah. And even Lorenzo Carter is a just a really intriguing guy that, I mean, he's not a first rounder, but he's a guy they have to, he's going to be a guy who could probably have a really long career too.
So if we sort of go through those defensive guys and kind of point out, flaws in some of the ones that are popularly linked to the Packers, if you flip over and look at the offensive side, do you think there's any offensive guys worth taking at 14 if things tend to shake out sort of according to plan?
Maybe. I think it's going to come down to them. If they go offense, I think it's going to come down to them taking an offensive tackle.
Agreed.
And, they could go for one of those wide receivers, but it was always Ron Wolf's contention, never take a wide receiver in the first round. Ted Thompson has done so well in the second round. Why bother? And there's some really good athletes in this draft, receiver athletes. So I would kind of rule that out. And I would think that it's possible someone like Connor Williams could go at 14. Now, that's a little high. You don't really hear too many people talking about it, but it's also a guy they could trade back for and maybe still get. And getting a tackle and a good one or a guard is valuable to them because they got to protect Rodgers and they need a starter on that side. And they need protection. They need to start developing some guys for that right side.
Yeah, and another name to throw out there, I think, could be Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame has had a run on linemen like I don't think I've seen since I've paid attention to the league. I mean, between all the guys that they've had lately, whether it's Ronnie Stanley or obviously Quentin Nelson is going to go really highly right now. And then, yeah. Of course, you've got I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah,
the kid in Dallas. I'm blanking on the name. Who's their guard in Dallas? Zach Martin. Yeah, and so they've got. I mean, they've had a ton of high picks, and so you know, based on pedigree alone, McGlinchey could be overdrafted a little bit. Now, you know, since you brought up offensive linemen, I do want to kind of revisit something that Gutekunst said earlier in the week. I think he was asked a question of, you know, philosophically, do you think that teams need dominant pass rush to sort of protect weaker secondaries, or can you have a really strong secondary and then that can cover up a weaker pass rush? And his answer was essentially that teams should go after big people, like physically large people, more so than smaller guys, because the bigger ones are harder to find. So, you know, you bring up something like that, and then all of a sudden it makes me wonder, you know, does that lend any credence to this Vita Vea stuff that was there for a while with this guy from Washington? What do you think about the big versus little comment?
Well, I think that that's true. Big guys don't grow on trees, and when you find some that are athletic, you go for it because they're rare. They're rare commodities. I don't know if Vea fits that exactly what he's talking about. I think he's probably talking about more like a McGlinchey, maybe more like a Tremaine Edwards, someone with really long arms. That type of big guy. Offensive linemen, you know, some of these guards that are in the draft, that Isaiah Wynn, Frank Ragnall, there's some really big physical guys that could really help. And so I do agree. I think he's saying don't take any chances on undersized guys, you know, and I think that is kind of what their philosophy has been for a long time.
So I don't really know which direction to think that they'll go in the first round, because there's times where I think that, like I said, maybe it's more likely that they move up because they have the extra picks or the extra ammunition to do so. And then there's other times where I think, well, if, you know, 1 through 12 are the really high value guys, and then maybe 12 through 30, there's not a ton of difference. Maybe it makes sense for them to trade back and pick up another pick in the second or third round if they can. So, I mean, what is your sort of sense? I mean, again, none of us know until it starts to play out on Thursday, but do you get an idea that, or I guess let me start with this. When it's all said and done, do you think they pick at 14?
I'm going to say right now, no.
I agree.
I actually think they're going to trade back.
Okay.
And one of the reasons could be that, let's say Lamar Jackson doesn't get taken at 12, and he's sitting there at 14, and there's a team that, you know, who knows what New England wants to do.
True.
You know, there's a whole bunch of teams that are thinking quarterback. You know, New Orleans has to replace Drew Brees at some point. Sorry, Taysom Hill. But, you know, New England's got to replace Brady at some point. I just think that holding that pick up, if if they're indeed, you know, if Jackson or one of those other, maybe, you know, Rosen falls, who knows? But that could be a really valuable pick. And all of a sudden, you know, maybe you get an extra first rounder, or maybe you get another second rounder. And you're talking about building a lot of really good depth. But you have to do it if you're convinced that the guy at 14 wouldn't transform your team right away. You know, wouldn't be Marshawn Lattimore. You know, if you have that kind of guy, you got to take him. I don't care how many picks you're being offered, because it can give you a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the New England thing is interesting because they're sitting there at 23. And let's say hypothetically they do decide to move up to with somebody for a quarterback. You know, if the Packers were to move from 14 to 23, or you mentioned New Orleans, 14 to 27, you know, something like that. Even in Pittsburgh, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is nearing the end. So there's 28 where there could be an interest in a quarterback. That would be then a situation where if they're picking in the 20s, that I think it introduces more of the guys that we talked about earlier. Not necessarily the big boomer busts like Marcus Davenport or Harold Landry, but I think it could bring in more of the corners. Like, you might feel more comfortable taking Mike Hughes in the 20s than you would at 14, or Josh Jackson from Iowa, you know, in the 20s, something like that. Do you think that those guys would be more reasonable in that range, or am I just sort of, you know, fishing for nothing here?
Oh, no, I think you're right. I think they would. And I think what we really have to find out is, do they fit what Gutekunst views as necessary for their secondary? You know, do Hughes, Jari Alexander, Josh Jackson, do they have what they require? Because there's some better athletes than those guys. You know, Dante Jackson, you know,
Dante Jackson.
Yeah, I got so many names in my head that I'm second guessing everything. You know, maybe they feel there's a guy who's more suited to what they do late in the round or in the second round, and they figure they can get address maybe the offensive line in the first round, or maybe there's a pass rusher. Maybe they feel more comfortable taking Marcus Davenport there. I don't know. It's just that you don't want to get too far where you're taking guys who, when you've got the 14th pick, you don't want to take guys who have flaws. You know, like last year, Josh Jones has first-round athletic talent, but there's obviously something missing from his game that made him a second-rounder, and we saw it. You know, now maybe he'll get better and you know, be a Pro Bowl guy, but there's something not there. And what you want is to find a guy with that stuff. And so if at 14 there is a guy who you think has that ability, is more of a sure thing, then you got to take him. If not, then move back and take more shots, because you're probably going to get maybe two first round picks, maybe a first and two, you know, 2 seconds. I don't know. But it really kind of depends on that 14th pick. Who's there?
So if we look at the roster a little bit more broadly, you know, I think it's obvious that at some point in the draft they're going to address corner and edge rusher. Do you think that with either of those positions, the Packers are in a scenario where they could sort of mimic what Ted Thompson did last year on running backs and just take 3, 2, 4, as you know, a bunch of those guys, and just kind of take a lot of swings at the bat given the number of picks they have, even if they're more toward the middle rounds?
Yeah, I think they're going to take a lot of swings at pass rushers. I think that the way to overcome a lack of corners is to beef up your pass rush. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they take a whole bunch of those during this draft, and maybe fewer corners than people expect.
There's a couple guys that could go in the middle rounds that are sort of these pass rush specialists that are kind of like these undersized guys that can't really play the run. But you know, you set them loose with their hair on fire and they can get after the quarterback. In my time in Green Bay, the Packers haven't really had anybody like that because most of their guys, I mean, I guess the closest they would have would be Fackrell just in terms of body type. But in the past, have they ever been willing to take this pass rush specialist that maybe only plays second and third down?
You know, probably the closest that I could think of that would be Kabir.
Okay.
But they took him in sixth round, I think. That was a true pass rush guy. I mean, Jamal Reynolds they took in the first round, and he was a pass rush guy, and that was a complete bust. Mm. So they might be a little bit leery about doing that early. I would be surprised if they went for that type of guy. I just kind of feel like they're not the type of team that does that, that they want a guy who they think can play an all-around game and that specialty play is not really something they're interested in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I tend to get that sense as well. The two guys that sort of jump out in that specialist category, and I'm going to, you know, completely destroy one of their names, but the kid from Oklahoma, the edge rusher, Agbonya Okonrokwo. I don't know how to say that one at all. Sorry. And then the second one would be Uchenna Nwosu from USC. Those are sort of the undersized speed rush guys that will play with unbelievable motor and intensity, but not, you know, necessarily the physical gifts to play.
But they can make those guys, you know, you can still use speed rushers like that. You can line a guy up on third downs, or he can, you know, he can still rotate while they work on him to become more of a complete player and be an outside linebacker. You know, they can turn those defensive end. They've done it before. You know, they've constantly done it before. And I absolutely see them considering those type of guys. There's a guy from Ohio State. His name escapes me right now, too, defensive end.
Sam Hubbard?
Yeah, Sam Hubbard, another guy who's got some, you know, real potential. So I don't discount them taking those type of guys because they turn them into linebackers and they teach them what they can.
In terms of the receiver position, that's, you know, an area where, you know, the departure of Jordy Nelson would in theory leave some playing time and some snaps on the perimeter, although Jimmy Graham will certainly take some of those. You know, as you mentioned, Ted Thompson had a really good track record in the second round with receivers. And then, you know, they've also, you know, gone much lower than that and sort of swung and missed a little bit late with Aberderis and Janice. And, it looks like perhaps D'Angelo Yancey, another fifth round pick, could be in the bust category as well. Although I'd like to see what he does in the spring, but how do you sort of think that they will address the receiver position? And do you think that that is a weakness now that, that Nelson is gone?
I don't know if it's a weakness. But I think what we'll see is them address it either through wide receivers, second round, third round, or tight end. They do have to, they can't count on Jimmy Graham being around forever. And so I would not be surprised if they take a tight end in the second round. Now, most of those guys are receiver types, so you're sort of getting a little bit of both there. But there's still some talent to be had in second and third round. I think there's quite a bit, and there's some real speed in that second and third round too. You know, they brought in that Dante Pettis from Washington, who's a 4.47 guy, and you know, DJ Chark's in there. He's a burner. You know, they're just Christian Kirk. There's still some really good talent out there that I think they could still wrestle away in those rounds.
Yeah, I think that I would be shocked if – I know I've seen Ridley to the Packers in a number of scenarios. I don't really buy into that. But I think that in the first three rounds, I would be surprised if they didn't take some sort of pass catching option, whether it is a tight end or a receiver. I think they've got to try in the first three to get something there. Because, you know, again, you know, Jimmy Graham is older and is not necessarily the player that he was. And, you know, Randall Cobb's production has been down a little bit, though it should, you know, improve with Rodgers back. But, you know, the other receivers that they have available are not necessarily, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't think they have a lot of guys that are young and up and coming that can really be legitimate options this year if somebody gets hurt. Like, I don't necessarily think Trevor Davis is going to come in and be, you know, a significant contributor. And I don't think that Michael Clark will grow enough where you could throw him out as a starter if injuries happen left and right. So I do think they need somebody that could give them a fourth receiver, whether it's a tight end or a receiver at some point.
I agree. I think that's going to be very important, that it's got to be a receiver or a tight end. And they have to, even if they take a tight end in the second round, they still need to take a receiver. And if they take a receiver in the second round, they still need to take a tight end. Those are positions they've got to keep building. When you got a quarterback like that, you got to give him some guys to throw to.
Now, that pretty much covers, well, I guess really quickly, do you think they're going to draft a running back?
No.
I don't either. Okay, so we got that out of the way. I could see him taking a quarterback later in the rounds.
Yeah, definitely are signing a guy, undrafted guy.
Right, exactly. So that pretty much covers offense. And then real quickly, since we've already been at this for 45 minutes, but on the defensive side of the ball, Blake Martinez, of course, played significantly better in his second season than he did as a rookie, tied for the league lead in tackles and was remarkably durable, playing, you know, upwards of 90% of the snaps. What do you make of the rest of the inside linebacker position now that Joe Thomas is gone, now that Morgan Burnett is gone for that, you know, potential hybrid role, and Jake Ryan is pretty much the only guy they have left with experience there?
I don't know if you want to call it a position of need, because they could get along with Blake Martinez, and so many times they're in nickel and dime that I don't know that you have to have another dominant inside linebacker. And I still think that Clay Matthews is going to at some point see more time inside, but they do need numbers. I mean, if they can get a guy who can cover a better version of Joe Thomas, then they need to go and get that, because they lost that, and neither Martinez nor Jake Ryan are cover linebackers. And you got to have someone who can run with the tight end once in a while. And so I think that is a position of need for them.
The way that I was sort of thinking of the inside linebacker spot is, you know, you look at the number of times that Martinez or Jake Ryan blitzed the last couple of years under Capers, and even Joe Thomas too, and sort of the lack of production that came from it. Now, none of us really know exactly how Petton's defense is going to look, but I wonder if they need more pass rush from the inside linebacker spot, just because, you know, if Matthews and Perry are not necessarily getting it done in a given game, or if, you know, one of the big three up front happens to get hurt. I don't know. Do you think they need an inside linebacker with better rush skills?
I think it wouldn't hurt. I think they do need someone who can, you know, and this is the great thing about someone like Tremaine Edmonds, is that he can line up at middle linebacker and then walk down and line up next to Clay Matthews. And then all of a sudden,
exactly,
which of those two guys are you going to double team? And you saw the Packers do that with Blake Martinez. Capers did that quite a bit, walked Martinez down to the outside linebacker position. So I think that's something that is going on in the NFL, and you do need some guys that can get after the quarterback a little bit. So, I mean, that's why you talk about versatility. That's what teams are looking for.
And then the last position on defense would be safety, which, you know, with the departure of Morgan Burnett and the lackluster season from Josh Jones, and sort of the unknown factor with Kentrell Bryce, given that he didn't play for the majority of last season with that foot injury or ankle injury, I really don't know what direction they want to go there. I mean, do you want Josh Jones to be your day one starter and potentially have some of the same, you know, mental mistakes that there were last season? Or I don't really know if if I want to consider that a weakness or not. I mean, I guess if you had to ask me, I would label it a little bit of a weakness. What do you think?
A little bit. I would line Josh Jones up there and find out during the off season whether he can handle it or not. And, you know, better to know it now than, or early in training camp than to, you know, find out in week one, the regular season. So I do think they'll line him up there. I do think Kentrell Bryce is still in the picture as well. I think whatever defensive back they wind up with, they will probably get somewhere a hybrid type guy, a hybrid corner safety guy, and will let him compete for some playing time too. I don't think anything's set there. Of course, if they drafted Derwin James, that, you know, would greatly improve their safety position.
Definitely.
I think they do need some improvement there, but whether that comes from within or, you know, a draft pick, a high draft pick, I just don't know.
So I think that pretty much exhausts the needs that I can think of in terms of going through the positions. Is there anything else that we haven't hit on yet?
Long snapper.
Oh, yeah, long snapper. That's right. Do you think that they would ever use a pick on a long snapper? I wrote that article about Tanner Carew, who was the one player invited to the combine out of Oregon. He could go in the sixth or seventh round, as some long snappers have done recently. I just can't see them using a pick on a guy. I think they'd rather bring somebody in that's an undrafted guy.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think maybe they could use a compensatory, but I just, you know, right at the end. But no, I don't see it either.
So
I can't imagine.
We'll have to see who will come in and challenge for that position. And while Brett Goode enjoys his summer, he will wait and find out if he needs to get a call again in the second week of August to hightail it up to Green Bay. So I think other than that, we've just about covered everything. I know that we have to make official predictions, I guess, on that are due Wednesday afternoon to our editors. But I really don't know what I'm going to do other than I think that they're going to trade. I don't think they're going to pick at 14, but which direction, I don't really know. Do you have anything that you want to declare or predict right now, or should we have them come back and visit another time?
Yeah, I don't have anything. I don't know anything that I think I haven't mentioned here today. So, you know, it really, I think everything's, you know, all packed up and ready to go. And now we just got to wait and see what happens. But we'll both have our picks online and in the paper on Wednesday. So, or Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
This seems like a good time to plug the live blog, Tom.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for reminding me. Yes, 3 full days of live blog. I will be bloggy-eyed by the time the draft is over. So please come and join me. It's going to be a blast. I'm going to have to really get my blogging on because I haven't since the last game of the year, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, with no playoffs, you were done before December ended.
Holy cow! I'm gonna really have to get in there and start practicing. So, come and join us. It's gonna be a blast.
So definitely check out the live blog with Tom and check out all the coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com. We thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Packers Podcast. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.